Hi, this is Heaton Chaw.
And this is Stelly FD.
And today on the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about something I'm really curious about.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
And I have Stelly here. And his company seems to do this, and my company doesn't. None of my companies have done this often. And what I'm talking about is travel. So traveling as a company is the topic I want to talk about. And mostly I'm just going to ask Stelly a lot of questions about this because I'm super curious. For context, in my company, we don't travel at all. In my companies right now, it's very, the teams are small. But even at Kissmetrics, when we had a larger team and I was running it, we would travel maybe once a year and do a meetup. But it wasn't like a lot of teams getting together too often or things like that. While a lot of companies I'm involved in, some of them, I would say probably 20-30% of them, if I were to guess, they actually travel quite a bit, do retreats much more, maybe every quarter. They might be traveling to other countries and things like that. So uber curious about this. And I thought, you know, our listeners might want to hear about this as well.
Yeah, would love to chat about it. And the timing is perfect because I'm currently traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So what are you curious about?
How has it helped your company?
How has it helped our company? There's a number of ways. I think it has helped our company in the sense that the people involved with the company, let's start with the founding team. My two co-founders and I, all three of us, love to travel. So because we love to travel and we do it a lot, building a business that does it as well is just supporting our lifestyle. It's just, A, it's not interfering with our lifestyle as much when we personally travel, but it also supports it on top of it because we travel with the business and we enjoy that. So that's one thing. I think very kind of, it's not in terms of money or revenue or anything like that, but it's still very, very important. It's something that's aligned with it's cultural. Yeah, absolutely. It's aligned with the way we like to live, not just the way we like to work. So that's one. The other thing is that because we do travel a fair bit also as a company, we do team retreats. We used to do team retreats every quarter. Now we're doing two a year. But because we do that, it helps us calm down. And so it helps us in many other ways, one of which is that we have kind of compartmentalized a lot of the needs that we would have in the day-to-day to have constant brainstorming meetings and talk about long-term plans or have debates about things where there is misalignment in the company. A lot of these like kind of larger discussions we don't have day-to-day. And when these things come up, they can usually kind of build up until the next retreat because people know that there's going to be a dedicated time where we are in a different place, kind of out of the day-to-day environment, which allows us to be maybe a little bit more creative, maybe thinking about things differently because you're just not in the same office or same kind of work environment you're every single day. There's going to be a dedicated time where we're all going to spend quality time together, but we're also, we're going to have time to talk about things that can't just be covered sometimes in a 15-minute meeting or that are debates or discussions or where there's disagreement and we need to kind of fight it out and figure it out. So we kind of collect all the larger discussions and bigger themes to be addressed and talked about and figured out during the travel time and the team retreats. And that allows us to be more focused day in, day out, because we know there's going to be an outlet for that. So people don't feel the need to constantly say, we need to have a meeting to talk about this because I feel like this is a really important thing. If it's not uber urgent, they know, well, the next retreat is coming up in 6 weeks and I'm going to put this on the agenda. I think we need to talk about this. And there's going to be plenty of time and space and the right environment for us to talk about that. So that's definitely something else that I think has been working well for us. And then coming back to the first one, it has helped us recruit because people that love traveling and that where traveling is a big part of their quality of life and what they're interested in, they are more attracted to us as a place to work for because it's such a big part of everybody in the company. So I think that, again, coming back to the culture side, because it's a strong part of our identity and our culture, it helps us hire certain people because that piece is very, very valuable to them. And they value it more than, you know, something else. Those are some of the ones that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. And so in short, it's cultural actually.
Yeah.
Right. And that's from the co-founders onwards. So it's not like you have, you know, a couple people that like to travel and a couple that don't. It's basically like, if you're going to join this company, then you're more than likely to be a traveler. You're probably 100% true. Correct?
Yeah. Well, I would say that there's probably one or two people in the company that enjoy travel, but not quite as much as the rest, and they do it a little less.
Sure.
So I don't think it's 100%, but yeah, it's almost everybody.
Okay. Cool. And so have you found any negatives to it? You know, just getting to the heart of it. Because then I've got a few other different types of questions about this too.
Yeah. Yes. So there are negatives to this. I think that traveling while working is a skill that most people don't have and needs development.
Okay. Tell us more.
So I do think that, well, traveling in itself, you know, there's a lot that you do when you're more experienced versus the things you don't do. And depending on how much you travel, it's a lot of little details, but they accumulate into something really significant. So when you travel and you're experienced, you typically learn to do some best practices. Like you learn to travel really light. You learn to just be better at anticipating and planning for how taxing and time intensive the time between traveling from place A to place B will be. So you're much more conscious of which airports you choose, you know, what are kind of the layoff times. You just getting more experience makes you more sensitive and more understanding. All right, this is going to take me this amount of time. I'm probably going to be able to work there, but not there. This is probably going to be a huge waste of time. And also that day, I'm not going to be able to do anything productively, even if I arrive at the final destination at whatever it is, 2 p.m., and I still have some hours in my day left, maybe because I still have to find the hotel, I have to figure out a bunch of stuff, I'm not going to be that productive. You're just better at assessing that and more sensitive to how to travel well and fast and lean and mean than when you're not that experienced. And then you understand that when you travel, if you want to work, there's some things that are really, really crucial, but they're not given. You need to have good Wi-Fi. That's not given anywhere and everywhere. And you can't just assume the Wi-Fi is going to be good, no matter if it's a hotel or an Airbnb or whatever it is that you're working out of. You kind of learn to do some research and some homework and figure it out if you can beforehand. But you immediately assume that when you arrive somewhere, you're going to be disappointed. So they told you they have good Wi-Fi. They showed you all the stats and what they have. And then you go there and it's not working, right? So you need to have kind of plan Bs and Cs for Wi-Fi, for where am I going to get breakfast? Where am I going to get my coffee? Am I going to be working somewhere where it's quiet and I can have calls, or will I be working out of coffee shops? And then I need to figure out where do I do my work out of that, where I need the environment to be quiet. So you just learn that a lot of the details day in, day out that are kind of automatic, you know where to have breakfast and lunch, you know where you can work out of quietly or not. You figured all these details out. Sometimes it's even like details like, you know, where can I get my laundry washed or something? All this stuff is new and needs figuring out, and that figuring out equals friction. And when you're not experienced, you typically grossly underestimate the amount of time or the amount of disruption that these details will have if you don't figure them out quickly. So when you experience travel, you figure out that, you know, first day you need to kind of check off a bunch of things and get into a routine as quickly as possible. You learn that, you know, I've learned that the way I eat when I travel heavily, the way I work out, the amount of daylight and sunlight I get to combat, you know, any kind of jet lag, the speed in which I can create some kind of a routine, all these things make a massive difference if I'm going to be really productive or if I'm not. And people that are not experienced, they haven't trained this. They underestimate these things. And what happens is, oh, I'm going to be working the next 5 days from Barcelona or whatever. And then it's like, oh yeah, my flight had a delay and I arrived at 3 and I was really jet lagged. So I fell asleep. So the first 3 days of those 5 days are fucked. And then the Wi-Fi didn't work and I, you know, got sick and I had to do this. And it's like all these tiny little things, and they accumulated to those 5 days of working that you planned actually turned into just 2 days of working. So it can be very, very disruptive. And it's a skill that it's always somewhat disruptive. But the pros can outweigh the cons if you know what you do and if you're skilled and very thoughtful. And if you're not, you can travel and almost get nothing done. And it can be very frustrating for you and for everybody else that works with you.
Yeah, I never thought about that. There's so many, it's friction, it's time, so many things you have to figure out. Wow. That's really helpful for me, at least, just dissuades me from wanting to do it. So, we don't have travel cultures currently. That being said, there is a few people on the team that do end up traveling and working, but it's almost their choice because our teams are remote, like your team. So we do have people who do like to travel, and there's probably at least one or two of them. They travel anywhere from two or three times a year to like five or six times a year. Yeah, interesting. Sort of more, I guess, final part of this. Then I'm sure we have, there's more to say. But one of the questions, the last question that I had, the main one was, I've been in situations where somebody has a really strong opinion about the cost of travel and how it's a waste of money. Like when a company does it the way you guys do it, or the way like Buffer does it, or the way that some other companies do it. But those are the two that come to mind, you folks and Buffer, that at least I'm used to. Even the folks at Automatic do it a little bit more than most. And they're remote teams. The commonality is all three of your companies are remote teams. And these companies are doing it as they scale. All three of you seem to be, companies that'll keep doing it. So tell me more about the costs around travel and like how you would, like, let's say somebody like an advisor, investor came and said, hey, can you just justify the travel from a cost perspective? Or just tell me, more about that.
Well, yeah, well, thankfully, nobody bothers us about this. And we wouldn't allow anybody to bother us about it. But
I understand. Yeah.
The question is still very valid, right? Because, in the early days, the cost was, for most of our company history, we were just like 6-7 people. And we're all in the same location. And the cost is not that much, especially because you would find a place where you can live and work out of, kind of Airbnb, a nice apartment, and that's that.
Okay.
Now, as we grow, and we're 16 people and we're a lot more distributed. And in some places, like this year, we're going to have a team retreat in Berlin. And Airbnb doesn't work in Berlin anymore. So all of a sudden, getting accommodation for 16 people and a place to work is much more complicated than we thought it would be. So yeah, cost accumulates eventually. I think that there's a few things to justify the cost. Well, number one, if you're a heavily remote team, then you're saving, typically your company will save in office cost and maybe lunch cost, in some companies' cases in salary. There's all kinds of just pure dollars and cents savings that you have as a company. And that's great, but part of that cost saving, you have to reinvest in company culture. You have to reinvest in these people truly feeling a connection with their coworkers and with everybody in the company. And it's very, very hard.
Hey, hang on.
What?
I love the way you said that.
What?
Like these people are really feeling a connection.
Yeah.
Like I want to dive deeper into that. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. I think that no matter how awesome, whatever Slack is and virtual, productivity environments and project management tools and Google Apps and all that and Skype, I do think that humans need to feel a deep connection to the people they work with to truly feel fulfilled and not just feel like they're doing good work or they're working in somewhere interesting or they get a good salary or whatever. I do feel like people work better when they feel like they're working amongst friends, when they feel like they know the people they work with really well and they care about them. And when they feel, I think, understood by them, when I feel like people really get me and truly understand me and people feel like they're my friends, I will trust them more. I will be more open to them. I will be more dedicated to them. I will have more fun. I'll be more creative. I will do better work. And there's a lot of great tools out there and you can do a bunch of stuff virtually, but I do think that the human connection, the strongest way of having a real human connection is interacting in person. And even we know this. I mean, we could do this podcast every week on Skype. There's no way for you to come to our office and for us to sit down. But one little tiny beautiful thing about it is that when we have a really good recording session and we feel, fulfilled and we feel excited about what we talked about or what we learned from each other, we embrace and we hug each other.
That's right.
And over a year, this has accumulated to, a lot of hugs. Right?
Yeah.
And these hugs do make a difference. I can't quantify it in dollars and cents, but we have gotten a lot closer and our friendship has gotten a lot deeper because we spent some time face to face and in person, not just voice to voice over Skype. So yeah, I do think that when you're a remote company specifically, bringing everybody together is absolutely crucial. It's not optional, I think. If you want to have if you want to have the greatest people and you want these people to stick around for a really long time and be really fulfilled and really productive. So, yeah, we need to bring people together once in a while. And these people then, you know, because we are somewhere else and we have not just the day to work together, but we have the evenings to spend together as well. We will have dinners together. We will have drinks together. We will go and explore the city together, work out in the morning together. We'll spend some quality time that's not work related together. And it's easy to underestimate the dividends that quality of time can spend. It can resolve the conflict between two people and really speed up the productivity in a certain department. It can make any kind of communication friction could go away, or it can make somebody that was just about to leave stay because he or she was reminded how amazing the people are they are working with. And they go, fuck it. If I get a little bit more money over there, I want to stay here with these humans. So, you know, you can save a ton of money as a remote company. Some of that you need to reinvest. And I think that that's one way to justify the cost of this. And I mean, other ways to justify the cost is just to you know, combine it with other things that are happening. So we try to be very leveraged when we travel as a business. I'll give you an example to this. So when we travel to Berlin, for instance, one of the reasons we like Berlin as a retreat place is that we have a bunch of customers in Berlin. So it gives our team the opportunity to go and physically visit some customers that they could never visit otherwise, right? Because we're almost never in Berlin. So we'll plan in some time to do customer visits in those cities. There's going to be a conference in Berlin during the time we're there. I'm giving a talk at that conference and a bunch of our newer team members will join as guests in the conference and will hear my talk, but also have then the ability to mingle and network with the audience and see if we can do some more hiring because we're looking for people to hire in Berlin. So we're thinking about all these other related things that are going on and we try to be very practical in combining them and kind of getting more ROI out of a conference that I'm attending, you know, visit customers while we're there, trying to do some hiring or recruiting in that city when we're physically there. We're going to throw a meetup for all our customers and friends and other people that we might want to connect with. So we try to be very leveraged and kind of get as much buck for your bang when you're somewhere physically and see what you can get out of it. But I don't know. We've never done the math in are we getting more money from this than we're spending? That I think would be stupid and wasteful to try to do that math. But I think if somebody is like, why is this worth the money? For a remote team, I think it's very easy to justify. If you're not remote and you want to go travel, you know, it becomes a little bit more challenging. But I think still you could make a claim, maybe not for a 2-week vacation on Fiji or Hawaii with the entire team. But look at sales teams. Like, and I know people hate this and some quote unquote unicorn startup in the Valley got into trouble because of this. But sales teams in the history of sales, traditionally sales organizations have always had these internal competitions. And when you hit a certain quota, or if you're one of the exceptional people, there are travels involved in really luxurious hotels with going to shows and with really like, you know, crazy luxurious parties and champagne and all that stuff. And it seems wasteful, but most sales organizations have been very, very ROI based. And they knew if we take our best players, our best salespeople, and if we incentivize them to overperform, and then we treat them really insanely well, and we give them these gifts, and we give them this experience, and we give them the taste of final life, they'll go back and they'll work harder, and they will be more happy, more fulfilled, and more excited. And they will have stories to tell to their customers.